Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political middle. Have on the political left my good friend, Shireen Gorbani.
Hello. And listeners, in particular, was it Felix?
Felix.
Thank you for the sweet note. We love hearing from you. Thanks for tuning in.
And on the political right, my friend, John Dougal.
Hey, great to be with you. And Devin also said he appreciates the podcast.
He's
been living in Utah for a year.
Oh, wonderful.
That's great. Hey, all right, you guys, I'm going to start with a story. When I worked in Washington, I was over the media at a federal agency, the Environmental Protection Agency. And every morning I would show up at work and there would be news clips. This is, you know, this is 2003. So it's going back a while. We did a lot of things in paper.
Like clipped?
I'm talking about a printout.
Scissors.
Shireen and John are seeing my hands, but maybe 2 to 3 inches high of all of the media coverage of the EPA overnight.
Yeah.
Right? You still had a news cycle and new things. And as the, you know, associate administrator of public affairs, I would kind of go through and see which things I need to elevate to the administrator's attention. There might be something in Corpus Christi, Texas with an aircraft carrier. It might be something in the Boston Harbor with air quality. Anyway, these news clips back then were extensive. I'm trying to imagine what it's like in the Trump administration with how much news this guy creates every single day, what they do with the public message here. I mean, we've got the Trump administration purging high-ranking military and intelligence officials. We've got the raid of the former National Security Advisor's home, John Bolton, by the FBI. We've got plans to send National Guard troops to Chicago, New York City, and Baltimore. I can keep reading this list, but what do you make of it, Shireen?
It's a really intentional strategy. And this came out of, I think it was blatantly described by Steve Bannon. And the idea is if you can keep firing, right? Mm-hmm. So I think their plan is three big stories a day.
Media overload.
Just keep pounding in these big splashy stories, even if they are nothing burgers, even if they're meaningless, you make it a big thing. You trump it up, right? Like send it out. It's his message. It's his style. And distract.
All right.
And distract. And also the dismantling
flood
of our government is also happening.
Okay. So John, we're a public affairs news program on public radio.
Uh-huh.
How do we cut through that? Like, what do we pay attention to and what do we not?
Well, we're trying to look at those things first and foremost that have some applicability to Utah.
Yeah.
So
we're
trying to filter it from a Utah lens to say, okay, which of these international and national stories color here? But to be blunt, we miss some of it. We drop some of it. There is so much out there that in a 30-minute program, if you will, we can't cover it all.
Yeah.
Nor should we.
Yeah.
I think we pay way too much attention to the federal government.
Okay, so I'm with you, and we'll push past that. But so on that point—
And I don't mean on the show. I mean in society.
The Supreme Court clearing a path for the Trump administration to cancel nearly $800 million in National Institutes of Health research grants. These are grants that were dedicated to health disparities or what the administration might call EDI work. Interesting, but that affects Utah.
Yeah, that affects Utah. So we have, I think we're really lucky to have actually the robust health research environment that we do have. Somebody was telling me, I don't know, do you know if it's still true? We're one of the leaders in anti-venom. Is that true?
Oh, interesting.
I don't know
wouldn't
if that's still
me.
True.
Yeah,
but it was something they knew from that we have venom research. Anyway, point of the story is that we have, I mean, I happen to know a number of folks who work in our medical school that are really deep in incredible research that's advancing interventions around cancer, saving people's lives, immunology, thinking about the work that's happening, the research that happened here on COVID, honestly. Like there has been so much because we have a world-class research institution and we have recruited researchers that can advance our understanding of public health and health interventions more broadly. This is really distressing because we've already lost a huge amount of funding. I know that a number of, you know, grants have been scrapped. And to see this just continue to erode, and frankly, the Trump administration's position on public health generally is divest. That's what it is.
John, how would you comment? Because
divest, except for from my perspective, it's now invest in Intel and all these other things. It's like, why are we doing that?
But you're saying he's investing in chip companies. But not. Yeah. When I worked at Health and Human Services, I remember the hallway that was where the people sat that worked on health disparities. And the first time I walked down, I thought, health disparities, I need to understand that better. And then, of course, I look into it. And it was just really revealing.
And what does it mean?
Well, essentially, you have by race, ethnicity, you have very different health outcomes. and you want to understand it. And is it in the DNA or is it in the behavior? Different diets affect your health.
Environments.
Yeah. Different rates of smoking. Some race and ethnicities are more prone to smoke. Different parts of the world are more prone to smoke. Anyway,
and certain studies we do are biased one way or another with the patients that are in it.
Yeah, you try to understand that. But I just raise it as an issue because I don't know what to do with the Trump administration threatening to deport people to Uganda. You know, I don't know how that is a Utah issue, but I know when they cut National Institute of Health funding, and we have an academic medical center here in Utah, one of only 12 academic medical centers that share a campus with a broader research entity like ours. Like, yeah. It's a big deal here.
Yeah, I will just say that when we're talking about what's happening with people being deported, that is impacting Utahns. And we're seeing some really troubling news. I believe it's somebody who's a member of the symphony who's now in the news. There are just a number of folks that are being snatched by this administration with very little regard for due process, you know, the investment that we're seeing in, for example, ICE and the way that this is being rolled out in different cities. Those dollars, I mean, I know John would disagree with me. But we agree that it's an overspend on ICE at this moment. But when we think about things like if we're going to spend that kind of money, we could solve homelessness. Like, this is wild to me.
Yeah. John, how are you thinking about the National Guard kind of ramp up in some of these large cities? The reason I bring that up is you tend to be someone who appreciates local solutions.
Yeah. So I come from the perspective where we misuse and excessively use the National Guard for things they were never trained for, they never should do. They should be focused on the national security aspects of fighting wars and not on policing activities. We got lots of folks trained to be police, public safety officials.
That is not the National Guard.
And that is not the National Guard.
Yeah.
And so when we deploy them on those type of activities, I think we're misusing the Guard. And the Guardmen and women sign up for a part-time assignment, and yet they get deployed over and over and over and over. And I just think it's inappropriate from my perspective.
Let's talk about redistricting, shall we?
Let's do it.
Governor Abbott
in Texas.
Let's draw
some lines.
The Texas legislature approved their bill. They think it could swing as many 5 seats, Republican. Governor Abbott has called it one big, beautiful map, John. It just shows me how this this showmanship, this provocation is contagious to do that. But
it also shows me a little lapdog. I mean, he's doing exactly what Trump told him to do.
John.
And then we have Gavin Newsom.
Yeah.
With his response, which is, okay, we can't just pass a map, but we have to go through a different process. But they quickly pulled together some maps, quickly pulled together the votes, sent it in front of the voters, where they're looking to pick up 5 Democratic seats in California. And part of my concern is, I've talked in the past about this, when we destroy some of these norms, we tend to only ratchet in one direction. We don't ever seem to pull it back. And so with the technology we have today, are we now on the path where every election cycle we will redistrict? Because we got the technology that in a couple of days, we can draw maps for every state in the nation.
Yeah, great point. Used and to now, be a very much a hand, you know,
very
calculator
manual process.
Business.
So doing it every 10 years was a hard process. And now if you can just do it every election cycle, are we going to all be jockeying every election cycle, every 2 years, what the structure is of Congress, not just who gets elected, but what the boundaries and what the districts look like?
Shireen, what do you make of what Gavin Newsom's doing with his operations on X, where he's doing all caps and using the same kind of verbiage and language as President Trump? This is I think of Trump as a gifted communicator, whether you like it or not. And I think of Gavin Newsom as incredibly talented and smart.
Yes.
The guy's really a force sharp to be reckoned with.
Yes, I agree. So what I like about it is I think I'm tired of, I know that this isn't good for democracy, right? I think this is a devaluing and degrading of our entire system. But I'm also so tired of Democrats just sitting holding onto norms while Rome burns. Like, I'm just like, we have to do something, right? And so I appreciate the punching bag and I find it hilarious. I think the thing that's been so interesting to me is how it does feel like kind of like MAGA world is, it's like breaking their brains. Like, they can't understand. Like, they're very offended. They're very, you know, like, distraught by it. And I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. The pearl clutching over Newsom, you know, with a picture of what I guess it was, it the Pope or whatever, or was it I don't know. Anyway.
It was the Gulf of Gavin Newsom.
The Gulf of Gavin. That's a great example of it. It's just like you got, first of all, I find, you know, people on the kind of MAGA or whatever far right just to be deeply unfunny. And so then
I take offense if they're on the far right. I think they're on the left.
Hilarious.
But, you know.
Well, so but it's just something that's like so wild to just see people, yeah, lose their minds over what is honestly hilarious.
Everyone has their own sort of, you know, word choice. And Shireen often says deeply troubling or deeply something else. And she's saying deeply unfunny.
Unfunny.
Well, I guess I look here and, you know, it is a great parody that Gavin Newsom's doing, but I think it won't land him the presidency that he wants.
I agree.
He will be a lightning rod. He will draw attention to this issue and he will burn out in this process because he is not showing that he is presidential in this process.
We don't care about that anymore. Look who we elected twice.
But what I would get at
for Trump, but the question is going forward,
would it work for someone else? Yes.
I'm with you though, John. I don't think it makes him more electable, and I'm not a fan of necessarily of what he's doing, but he's very clever. And I think as a foil, if I can use that, it's a theatric term, isn't it? A foil.
Yeah.
I think he's foiling someone else who's going to be the candidate. He's doing something that's like creating
a cover.
Yeah. A space that can do it. But stay with redistricting for a minute. And let's talk about this judge, Diana Gibson, once again ruling
Utah district judge.
Yeah. That will just infuriate the legislature. And her quote was, to permit the 2021 congressional plan to remain in place would reward the very constitutional violation this court has already identified and would nullify the people's 2018 redistricting reform that they passed through Proposition 4. She's telling 30 days, John and Shireen,
John just said we can do it overnight.
Okay.
And yet she can't dictate that. I mean, from a judicial perspective, we would say, okay, you can nullify the map, which then creates a problem for the legislature. But to say you will do this in 30 days, I don't see how she has that power.
So
authority.
The state will appeal? Sure?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm just trying to think how this works, but the Supreme Court's already made a decision.
I don't see how the legislature just lets this ride.
Well, now, this is where, and listeners join me on this journey because I'm actually not sure that I know. The decision that the Supreme Court had made was that we have a right to reform our government, correct? So that's where she's saying there was a constitutional violation. So I think they can appeal this. Yes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's totally appealable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this, and I think listeners join me. They will. They're going to slow roll this as long as they can to not have to uphold the will of the voters.
Mm-hmm.
So let's go back. I mean, I'll talk about, because I'm on this show in my individual capacity and not anything else. And I'll talk about stuff I talked about when I was auditor years ago as this was going along. The initiative was designed to amend statute. It doesn't override the Constitution. The Constitution still governs any type of initiative or statutory activity has to comply with the Constitution. Now, the problem I take issue with the initiative was in the Constitution, it talks about legislative powers being vested in the legislature, which is the House and the Senate, and the people. Okay? That's what it says in the Constitution. And then when you go to redistricting, it's talking about redistricting. It gives a time that it has to take place, but the legislature shall divide the state into congressional districts, to summarize what it says there. So to me, redistricting is a legislative function. Mm-hmm. It is not a function of the people because we already separated out legislative power is between the legislature and the people. So to say we can run an initiative that can trump this part of the Constitution, I think the initiative was unconstitutional from day one.
Well, this is going to be something we're going to talk about again.
Okay.
And let's take a short break. Natalie Gochner with John Dougal and Shireen Gorbani. Stay tuned. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. That's BSOTAPodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. And we've been talking about redistricting and the pickle that our state finds itself in. It's interesting how it's going to push our state into the national spotlight a little bit, given that there's so much news about map
timing,
drawing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But before we left that topic,
We're not going to pick up a fifth or sixth Republican seat, are we?
Yeah. Yeah. I just wanted to just point out to our listeners, if I can have them go down a journey with me,
yes,
Shireen and
let's
John.
Do it.
Well, just that this issue has really surfaced because of the League of Women Voters, Mormon Women for Ethical Government, a female judge, And I think it's a, is it a majority of women on the Utah Supreme Court
now? Still.
Okay. Anyway.
3 out of 5.
I just find this really interesting because my whole professional career, I've been asked about women in leadership roles and how do we get more women involved in public service, in the public square, in elected office, in the C-suites, all those things. And over my career, it's started to happen. And look at the mark they're making. I'll say to Shireen, look at the mark.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful. I guess I would just say that I am very concerned about what kind of attacks we're going to see on the judiciary. I want to remind people that, for example, our Supreme Court is folks are reviewed by, they're ultimately nominated, correct, by a Republican supermajority in Utah, a Republican supermajority in our legislature. Vets these individuals and advances them to be on our Supreme Court. Judges are also picked by the Republican supermajority in this state.
So and let me nuance that just a little bit. So there's a nominating commission. They recommend names to the governor. The governor nominates. The Senate confirms.
Yeah. Okay, a few so little stages confirmed. To go through. Yeah.
But this is, again, they're confirmed by a Republican supermajority, right? So this is, I want people to understand that when we see the attacks on the judiciary that we are 100% going to see.
Shireen, my only disagreement there is when you keep saying a Republican supermajority, Republican supermajority, I just have to say, this is my party. They're good people.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not.
I guess
just because they're the majority, just because they're the majority doesn't mean they're bad or wrong.
No, but what I'm saying is they put these people in power.
Yeah.
They put these judges on the bench, and now they're going to start to impeach these judges because they don't like the decisions? Not cool.
So, John, we've got.
And I'm going to say whatever position they're taking isn't about men or women or that kind of composition. It's more about what are the rulings that are taking place.
We've got a bill that Governor Cox vetoed after the 2025 session that dealt with he didn't want the power to pick the Chief Justice of the Utah Supreme Court. Legislature's coming back to him saying, well, let's relook at that. And they've got Senate Majority Whip Chris Wilson, a great senator from Logan area. I think very highly of Senator Wilson. But they're changing the bill a little bit. They're going to go from 4-year appointments to 8-year. And the governor's saying that it's made some progress with him. Why is it a big deal who they pick as the Chief Justice?
I don't know all the details with Utah. I know at the federal level, the Chief Justice picks who's going to write the majority opinion and can kind of steer and can kind of keep to himself when he wants to be the driver on those things. I'm going to say there's probably some similarities where the Chief Justice has a heavier hand in terms of what takes place in the judiciary, clearly, than all
the
rest.
So the legislature wants to give the executive branch more power here. Is the way it currently works, the court picks their chief justice? Do you know?
I believe so.
I think that's right.
I don't recall off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think that's right, because the governor doesn't currently, and it's not the legislature. I think the court selects their own. And so anyway, listeners, thanks for going on that journey with us. Hope we're correct here, but that's something to watch for, because I think they're going to get a switch there. Let's talk as well.
And I'm going to note that our current Chief Justice, Durant, I think sides closer to the legislature than the other justices, which also creates an interesting situation there.
Well, I'll just say this is another power grab. This is a power grab by the legislature. Go on.
Okay, so we have a special session that's sort of in the queue. It looks like it'll be in September, probably an interim day in September. We're just hearing whispers about it that's going to happen. One of the things I think they're going to look at is the bill that barred public employees from negotiating contracts through a union. What do you want to say on that, you two?
Well, I can tell you that I think the organizers of the referendum are concerned, would like to see this process move forward in the way that it is supposed to, which is that it'll go back to the people for the vote. I think the legislature has a history of doing this, jumping in and trying to change things mid-course so that it doesn't go back to the voters. Again, I guess I would characterize this as another power grab.
And I'll note that I'm in the awkward situation of agreeing with FDR about the problems of government labor unions.
Yeah. Okay. Mail-in voting, you two.
Yeah.
This is interesting to me because I think that Governor Cox has made a very reasoned argument that mail-in voting in Utah is different than a lot of other places. We were early out the chute. We were very thoughtful in its implementation. It wasn't a reaction to COVID. It was something we deliberately tried to do and put in the necessary safeguards. And he's saying that we're an exception to the rule. We're an outlier where these other states did it virtually overnight.
Why is he talking about it today?
Because
what's driving it?
Because the Trump administration is attacking mail-in voting and wanting all of the Republican states to get rid of it.
President Trump says he's going to, by executive order, get rid of mail-in voting, which You look at the U.S. Constitution. The power rests first and foremost with the states, and secondarily with Congress, not with the president, with Congress, to dictate time, place, manner for elections.
Yeah.
So this is where the president's getting over his skis and something that he doesn't have the authority to do.
He's also
whether or not you like it, and I'm not really a fan of vote by mail, but the president's.
Don't you like about it, John?
There's a couple of situations. One. It was pitched as we're going to get greater voter turnout, and I don't think it's really materialized into that.
Mm-hmm.
There are some risks with vote by mail that I think are greater than showing up in person. Mm-hmm. I do understand the challenges of having potentially one election day, and so I'm okay with early voting.
Yeah,
and I'm okay with mailing ballots in where you drop it off in person, so you've got that greater security there.
Shereen, what would you add here?
I would just add, I've been with our county clerk through the process, really watched our mail-in voting. It's incredibly secure. I think it's an incredible system with a lot of checks and balances built into it that really reassure me. And I do think that it's helpful when people get to sit with their ballot, especially with the kind of misleading language that has shown up on our ballot initiative. Or I guess more it's on our constitutional amendments from the legislature, that giving people the opportunity to do their research, to take their time, to not just be confronted with it in a ballot box, I think is an improvement to our democracy. I would just also say that I think people like it, and the numbers show that. So what is it? 96% of Utahns who voted used their ballot sent, to mm-hmm. their mailbox. So this is something that we enjoy. Why would we restrict, make it more difficult, take away people's opportunities for research and thoughtful reflection around a process, especially when we like it?
Yeah.
I will note one other from a candidate perspective. The downside from a candidate is it makes for much more expensive campaigns. And so then you draw
get
more.
Get out the vote is different, complex.
Yeah,
yep.
And you draw in whether it's special interest money or more money driven to the media, other things like that. So from a candidate perspective, there's challenges that come with it.
Yeah. Been a long time since we've talked about Great Salt Lake on this program. I've been spending a lot of professional time on it.
And what do you know?
Please tell us something. Tell us something.
Yeah.
Well, I only brought it up because it is getting a bit of attention. You're going to see a lot more action on it. I would say to both of you that I think it's the greatest reputational risk our state faces, regardless of how you feel about it. We are going to
greatest reputational
risk. And what I mean is the outside, media, opinion makers, they're going to continue to pummel this state if we don't take greater
serious action
because it's a national issue. It's a hemispheric issue, and it's about our health. It's about our ecology. It's about our economy.
I would say it's also a problem with solutions that our legislature sometimes seems like they get very interested in and other times seems quite disengaged. It's something we could do something.
Yeah.
So where do you see the stories at a national level? I mean, I see the token occasional Wall Street Journal or New York Times.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's not like it's a daily or weekly kind of.
Yeah, it's going to keep building is my point. And as we get closer and closer to the Olympics, and it's a winter Olympics that needs lake effect and that needs, precipitation.
If we have an Olympics and no snow because of.
Yeah. And we have, I mean, look at this summer. We have rising temperatures and the evaporation and the dry ground. And it makes it so that the lake.
Hey, we're recording on Tuesday, and it's supposed to rain tonight.
I know,
tomorrow,
I should be happy about it.
I know.
Its forecast is an inch where I live, so I was like, yay.
Shereen, I have never seen the legislature turn so quickly on an issue in a good way.
Yeah.
They've done some amazing things. They've changed state water law. They've spent grundles of money to put in secondary water metering. They've put out an ag optimization program. They've appointed a Great Salt Lake commissioner. And I think the left gives the state a bad rap on Great Salt Lake. I think we're doing much more than people think. But I also think that it's got to get beyond our political leaders and get into the, the kitchen tables, conversations of Utahns.
I would say the kitchen sink.
Oh, the kitchen sink.
Everything.
Yeah. 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 I would say I agree with you to an extent. I do think there have been, I'll just say it felt like the momentum was building in our legislature. And then last year, I was not impressed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that we can continue that forward momentum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you think that's giving a bad name, but this isn't something where we can take a year off.
Yeah, fair. Okay. Last thing, we've only got less than a minute left in the program. We got an engagement, you two.
We do. We do.
Taylor Swift has gotten engaged.
Really?
Yes. I'm so glad we get to break this news to you, John. Aren't you so happy to know?
To who? And who's Taylor Swift?
women
gas. What does she have to do with 80s music?
I have to believe there's a Swiftie in your family. There's got to be one.
I will go home and check.
Go check.
Travis, there is not one that Kelsey, I know. Yeah, oh, and Taylor Swift are engaged.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was supposed to happen during a Super Bowl.
My husband's just now getting around to watching The Crown and texted me today and said, as I've been a person who's recently become a royalist, I'm very excited about our royal wedding on the horizon.
I love it. Well, it's been
thanks.
Fun.
That's why I listen to the podcast.
Now you know.
Hope people enjoy the thing. Just in the last seconds, any last word from you, Shireen or John?
I would just say, please, please, please make sure that we're clearing out the gutters because we got rain coming and it needs to go down.
I'm going to say September is Constitution Month. Take some time, read the Constitution. I love a video that BYU did decades ago, A More Perfect Union. It's about the Constitutional Convention. Watch it.
Excellent.
We talk a lot about constitutional issues. Most folks have not really read it, so take a little time.
That's a wrap. Shireen Gourbani, John Dougal, and Natalie Gochner. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.